lights out and away we go. What a match day this was. Podcasting from Studio 2520, somewhere near Akron, Ohio, and live via the paid subscription of Zencastr, the campus of Otterbein University, Westerville, Ohio. This is a good Irish Catholic boy episode of Tackling the Chicane. So, the Dropkick Murphys, American Celtic punk band, formed in Quincy, Massachusetts in 1996. The band's final record label, Hellcat, release, The Warrior's Code, included the song I'm Shipping Up to Boston, which was featured in the 2006 film The Departed. Aside from that, just a ripper, and this is going to kick off our countdown to St. Paddy's Day, and we shall have mostly Irish music for the next several episodes.
Awesome. Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, the reason I went to a rabbit hole today after your radio show.
Oh, yeah.
And during my 3K, or not 3K, 3 mile walk this afternoon, I was just kind of dipping in and out of a wee pint, which was a playlist that I put up a while back and added some extra tunes to that while I was just kind of walking and ruminating on, you know, St. Paddy's Day is kind of the kickoff to the spring season here in the great state of Ohio after a very long and arduous winter. So,
Well, I'm glad you got inspiration, I guess.
Well, I got some pogues in there too, so I will pull them up in future intros.
Yes, I've been listening to a lot of, in general, I mean, I've been doing this for a few years now, but a lot of Irish music. The Pogues are huge for me at the moment. Their album, If I Should Fall From Grace With God, is mint. I mean, there's not a skippable track. And I also discovered recently a group also from Ireland, more folky, but by the name of the Merry Wallopers. Definitely someone you should keep on your radar.
And got one in the wee pint today.
Okay, yeah, they are coming to Columbus in April. So,
ooh,
just saying. I'm not saying, but I'm just saying. Yeah, they're solid.
I can't. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah,
I would love to go see them. And I too am a fan of that genre, per se. So yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think it's going to be a pretty chock full show here in terms of content. We've, been sort of patiently waiting as F1 off season sort of slowly ticked by, but once it's here, it kind of comes in full force. And we got some testing action from Bahrain this week to go over. Of course, here stateside, the Great American Race, the Daytona 500, was this past Monday. So I think we both will have some thoughts on that. And switching it up a little bit on the soccer side of things, a little foray into Germany. Kind of interested to hear your thoughts there. And then an update on the Scottish Premiership title race with St. Johnstone and Rangers. So should be pretty exciting.
Yeah, so I guess before we dip into the testing that's happening right now, we're in the penultimate day of two of three, and did get to catch a little bit of that action. It's mostly just background noise at this point. Lots of equipment attached to vehicles and I'll say this before we go back to NASCAR. Unfortunately, Haas is still slow.
Yeah, let's I think maybe save that for now because like I said, I definitely have some thoughts about quite a few teams and their testing performance and we'll get into that, but
Excellent. Yeah, so Daytona 500. I dipped in the third stage of that race to watch live, and lots of action as per usual. For those people who don't quite understand the wreckage that happens in this particular race, let me just say this. If you're not a fan of kind of aero trains happening for a few laps and then someone dips out to try to position their car better and then chaos ensues.
I was had the privilege of watching the whole race with my buddies. Let's just say numbers. There was a specific group of people at cross or track practice that were not in attendance that afternoon due to this delayed Daytona 500. And yeah, so I watched all 200 laps, and honestly, yeah, we did have the big one with eight to go, did have your sort of chaotic ending. Those are pretty much guaranteed at Daytona, but very, very clean, solid racing for about 90% of this one. And really, I think there was definitely adjustments made to these cars over the off season in terms of safety. They seemed to be a bit more malleable, which was good because in years the two previous seasons with this new generation, it's doesn't seem like the car gave enough and caused a lot of injuries upon wrecks. So that seems to be improved. Also, the runs, so like the moves that were being made by drivers, you didn't really see that much last year on the super speedways. A lot more moving around. We saw some three wide action right before the big one too. So it does seem like NASCAR improved the super speedway package this season.
Yeah, and so you can almost anticipate what had happened.
Yeah.
I thought it was remarkable that Chastain kind of boogied out of that by 1 inch and everything kind of happened behind him. But there were some questionable, I guess, flags.
I have some qualms with race control. I will definitely say that. As a Bubba Wallace fan.
We were texting back and forth, and you had indicated to me that you felt like, you know, the when the spin happened, they probably should have thrown a caution flag. It was before the start finish.
Yeah. Richard appearance, for those who are not privy to the picture here. Yes.
I kind of figured that he would, as executive producer, he's been like this all day. So,
yeah. It's so when it first happened, obviously emotions are raw. You're invested. My good friend Michael is a William Byron fan, so he was obviously through the roof, and everyone else was sort of in despair. But at the first time live when it happened, I couldn't comprehend at all why the yellow didn't come out earlier. And to me, you know, I've seen it 1,000 times now on Instagram or whatever, the finish. Maybe a bit of a nitpick now. You have about 2 seconds in race control to decide to throw the yellow before Byron crosses the start finish. I really do feel like they dropped the ball a little bit. Richard is reign of terror here. But yeah, I still feel like, man, that could have come out earlier, because you know, Michael, my friend, was arguing that both Chastain and I think Cindric were below the double yellow line. They weren't really affecting it, so that's why they didn't throw it earlier. But I don't know. Any other time in NASCAR, if a car spins, it's boom, we're right on the caution button.
And yeah, there doesn't seem to be consistency.
No, that's my problem.
Yeah, and you can chalk up some of it to what we see on TV versus what they see in live action. But I agree. We've seen flags fly, as you said, in a very quick motion. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure. And usually, you know, NASCAR would rather have what they call overtime or
exactly
three lap.
It's never consistent in NASCAR. That's my biggest problem.
Yeah, it's not consistent, and I honestly think it came down to, well, to clean this up and regrid cars, and then do a three-lap shootout. Now we're here for another potentially 35 minutes or something. And maybe they just wanted to get this postponed race in the books.
Yeah, it was, I don't know. I get you don't want the circus ending, because we got the circus ending last year. And that's how Ricky Stenhouse won, which, good for him. But I mean, how many fucking cautions did we see last year in this race? So I don't mind the fact that, you know, I don't care. Me and you, IndyCar and F1 fans as well, finishing under caution is not really the big deal here. You know, it's more about why did it take so long for the caution to come out? And I don't know. That's just, again, it's a little bit, I know it's a nitpick, because the rest of the race actually was great, in my opinion, but I don't know. It's just, I'm a little sour still, I guess.
Yeah.
But one thing I do think is worth mentioning, Monday Daytona race, obviously a washout Sunday, stands were still packed. I mean, still packed. That's a good, that I think that's a very good sign of where the sport is and maybe just the general health of motorsports here in America, because, you know, there's in years past in the Daytona 500 where that instance has happened that they had to move it to the Monday, you're looking at maybe 70% capacity.
If that. And I think really what that speaks to is the global racing community realizes that NASCAR is an achievable ticket for the everyman, right? Compared to, and we've gone back and forth with, you know, I still think it's on kind of our list to get to an F1 race, but at the end of the day, I can go to a NASCAR race and for 1/10 of the price, I can sit and I can be live and I can watch and I can be engaged. And, you know, F1 still seems out of reach for even folks who are willing to spend the money. It's just so much. It's so much. I mean, we looked at a race in Montreal, just kind of playing around with it. And, you know, between the tickets and the inflated price of lodging, you're talking about for two people to attend an F1 event, it could be as much as $5,000 to $6,000. That's no bullshit. I mean, I looked at packages for lodging. It's insane.
Yeah. There is a pretty large barrier to entry with F1. I think that's not really any news at all. And still, I think, you know, people would probably do well if you're trying to get into motorsports and see it live. You know, NASCAR and IndyCar, and especially IndyCar, I mean, you're seeing incredibly talented drivers for a 10th, a 15th of the price. And the general treatment of fans and like how engaged they keep you is going to be higher as well. You know, I mean, obviously we haven't been to an F1 event, but just from reading about people going or knowing people have gone, it's more of a, it's just more of like, you go to the race and that's kind of it. You're just another person there, you know, maybe the whole experience isn't as great as if you went to say Mid-Ohio or whatever.
Sure. Well, and I'll hearken back to that particular race. You know, $110 gets you all access. And you're in the paddock, you're in the garage, you're brushing elbows with drivers. I mean, that was the most incredible thing about the Mid-Ohio IndyCar race. And even at the 500, you know, you can get a bronze badge for $100. That gets you everywhere. Compared to, I can't imagine. I think we bought an F1 ticket for $600. It gets you a seat and a seat only. You're not brushing anyone. So, yeah. All right. So you want to talk about testing a bit, or can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, there's some buffering going on, but generally speaking, it's just buffering basically. So try to work through it, but Yeah, we can get into F1 testing here for sure.
So I did, I dipped into a couple of the sessions just for a little bit and, pulling up some info on the F1 site. Basically, the takeaway from the first 2 days, not really any surprise that Red Bull is still pretty much the team to beat. Kind of a mixed day for Ferrari, but they seem to be taking a decent step forward. Other than that, Mercedes looks pretty consistent. Williams looked very good in testing. I don't know. This it's kind of you're really not going to grab a whole lot of info from these 3 days. Cars have a lot of ancillary rigs on them during this particular time. So I guess basically we just need to look at the fact that a lot of these cars have improved over last year.
Yeah.
And hopefully, we'll see when it comes down to the first GP who's going to
Yeah.
be in that top, top 10 is always the.
Yeah. I it's going to be the same old, I think, in terms of winners of this. I think Verstappen wins 90% of the races this year. I'm going to be honest. I just don't see anyone even close to him. And again, it's testing, so it's like preseason football, But the first day, I watched pretty much all of the session or close to it. No one was within a second. Now, again, testing, huge caveat, but no one is touching Verstappen this year in terms of the world championship. That's not, I don't think that's really controversial at all. Whether what I do think is interesting about that is Verstappen continues to improve. The car seems to keep getting better. But his teammate, Sergio Perez, I think he's going to be in deep, deep shit by about midway through this season.
Well, and he has always been kind of the red-headed stepchild of that team. It's just going to be. So here's what's kind of in my mind with where we're at in this upcoming season. We all know that next year is going to shuffle the pot hugely. We have no idea who's going to land where, what drivers are going to end up in what team. And then if I go a bit further, 2026 is going to be a new car, possibly new teams. So I almost feel like this season is kind of a lemon. Little bit of a lemon.
Oh yeah. I think, and I go deep into this shit because that's just what I do. I mean, I'm on Reddit. I'm looking at what people are saying. I think everyone agrees this season is just, it's sort of a stopgap. It's a lemon, I think, is a great way to describe it because you pretty much have, and this is great marketing for us in F1, but you pretty much have the championship sealed before it starts.
Potentially.
Yeah. I guess potentially always, but Max Verstappen will probably dominate now to the level he did last year, who knows, but and you do kind of get the feeling that some teams are just kind of just were this regulation, we just didn't do well, and we're looking towards 2026 at this point. So, like we've kind of said a few times now, you still have the huge issue of Lewis Hamilton moving to Ferrari, sort of just hanging about the whole season, which, like we have said again, is sort of a domino effect of everything else, because you wonder what kind of treatment he gets from Mercedes this year. And then you have the whole thing with Carlos Sainz. He won't be at Ferrari next year. So there's two major, major names right. that are kind of this season. I think they're looking ahead, you know.
Where does Sainz go to unseat someone else?
And again, that's sort of I think that's the biggest storyline going into this season is, sure, Lewis Hamilton's, that is a big deal, but Carlos Sainz, who was the only non-Red Bull driver to win a race last year, doesn't, presumably, at the moment at least, doesn't know where he's going to race next season. So how does that impact going into, you know, Bahrain, the GP, and into the season as a whole?
Yeah, I think, the opening two or three races are maybe going to give us a little bit better look into where everyone's head's at. Potentially.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, I want to like Haas. I want to love the Haas team.
Yeah, you got to talk about it.
From what I saw just watching testing, unless they're holding a lot of cards back, this team is going to be exactly the same as last year.
I
18 and 19th position.
I think they're going to be worse. I think they're going to be worse.
I'll boldly say this. If they can't get their shit together, then possibly that opens the door in two seasons for another U.S. team. And I don't think that could they get booted out? I mean, I guess it's just a case of whether Gene Haas wants to keep spending money on it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they would get booted. A
very mediocre program.
Yeah, I don't think they would ever get booted just because they have proven to be sustainable and can field a car that's like in pay money. It's the biggest checks you have to, complete. But in terms of performance this season, new team principal in Komatsu, who has had some kind of strange interviews where he's been pretty pessimistic about the program this year. Hulkenberg is fine. Magnussen doesn't really do anything for me. This to me reads as maybe his last time in an F1 seat. There's just not a whole lot to look forward to if you're a member of that team or a fan of Haas at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I think for the purpose of the podcast, we will make some predictions in the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
As we've done in the past, and then we'll just let things unfold.
Yeah.
I think it'll be an interesting season, albeit a bit of a lame duck. But yeah. I could be wrong. I don't know.
We're just going to have to see. And I think we'll be able to tell fairly quickly within a few races. But I don't know. We'll see. One thing that I didn't discover until yesterday. I think the first two races of the year are actually on a Saturday.
So, yeah, I did. I saw that in my feed.
Yeah.
Which, hours wise, for us, doesn't really matter because a lot of these races are at, you know, 4 a.m. Local time. So whether it's, you know, 4 a.m. on a Sunday or on a Saturday, that doesn't
make much difference.
Doesn't really make much difference. So,
yeah. But just something to keep in mind, I guess, for those trying to stay in the loop.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Well, I think that suffrage of race talk is over.
Yeah. Most, I guess, not a whole lot of optimism on the program, at least on that side of the program. But,
well, we remain optimistic.
Yeah. Always.
Nothing could be better than a Haas points finish at this point. And that's kind of what I don't have any aspiration that it will be anything other than that. So, but we shall see.
That we will. So let's go ahead and shift gears here. And, you know, we've had a pretty solid branding on the podcast since the beginning in terms of what we're covering. F1, of course, being our mainstay on the racing side, and then on the soccer side, Premier League, Scottish Premiership, U.S. men's national team, all that good stuff. But basically, this season, a storyline that I feel is so impactful has developed in Germany that I kind of felt like any soccer podcast in good standing needed to discuss this in some way. And I'm referring to Bayer Leverkusen in the German Bundesliga. Now, to give people a quick history lesson on German soccer, there's sort of one mega superpower in Bayern Munich that have pretty much dominated the Bundesliga since the turn of the century, but in the past decade, they have never forfeited the league title. So they've won 11 straight league titles now. To the American sports audience, that is basically unheard of, because we have quite a few mechanisms in place that basically just make that sort of dynasty impossible. As we know, European soccer is a bit more Wild West in terms of monetary regulation, so in F1 for that matter too. So, you know, you can generally guess that the teams near the top are going to have the most money. Now, the reason we're discussing Bayer Leverkusen's match against FC Heidenheim today is because 22 matches into this season of 34 matches in the Bundesliga, so just 12 to go now, Bayer Leverkusen have opened up an 8-point advantage over Bayern Munich in the title race, and Bayer Leverkusen have yet to lose a game in any competition this season, be it the domestic league, the domestic cup, or the Europa League.
Include draws?
That does include draws. So their record at the moment in the Bundesliga, 18 wins, 4 draws, 0 losses. Basically, what is happening is we are witnessing maybe one of the biggest moments in German soccer history developing in Bayer Leverkusen. Potentially on their way to not only breaking Bayern Munich's streak of 11 titles, but winning their first ever title as a club. So this is, to say the least, this is a pretty big deal.
So obviously they sit at the top of the Bundesliga table at this point. Who is on their heels?
So Bayern Munich, who, like I said, have had this sustained run, are 8 points behind, which is significant this late into the season, in second. And then VfB Stuttgart are in third on 46. And then after that, honestly, it's not even close enough to really matter. Borussia Dortmund, who are traditionally the biggest rivals to Bayern in terms of being competitive, sit in fourth on 41 points. So it's a two-horse race, but honestly, it's kind of becoming a one-horse race. Bayern lost this past weekend. They lost the weekend before to Leverkusen. And I mean, obviously, if Leverkusen keep up this run of form, it should be it might be time to celebrate a title there, not too far in the future. But I've been watching this league pretty much since I started watching soccer, so I kind of have the feeling down in terms of atmosphere and the differences in play. Just wanted to get your thoughts on, like, did you notice differences from the Premier League just in terms of atmosphere, style of play, whatever.
A bit more quick and intense. I have a side note here. Why Bayer 04 on the back of the jersey?
Yeah, so that's like a traditional German thing to do is on the top of their jersey, they actually put their team name and then the bottom last name. So Bayer 04, if you're not familiar, actually, Bayer are like a giant pharmaceutical company, and like they make other products that you can buy anywhere that own the club. Like they basically are founded the club, which is sort of a difference from like England and stuff like that. A lot of teams, not a lot, but quite a few teams in Germany are like they were founded by these companies and they put the name like within the name of the club, or they're just very, very closely in tandem with these companies. So Bayer Leverkusen, literally owned by like Bayer Products. 04 is just 1904. That was the year they were founded. That's another sort of traditional German thing, is to put the year you were founded in your club name as well.
Well, and I also noticed names are on the skirt waist down below. So,
Yeah, and it's go ahead.
no, go ahead.
I just was gonna say, I think it's interesting you pointed out like the difference in speed. That's like what the Bundesliga is best known for. Speedy, lots of goals, lots of attacking. So maybe a little less emphasis on stout defense, which we get all the time in England and Scotland. So interesting you point that out.
In this particular match, though, not a huge scoring way here in the
Yeah,
first.
we kind of got Bayer Leverkusen in this match sort of in the midst of what happens a lot of times throughout a season, in a championship season as well, where you kind of have to grind out some results on the road. So it wasn't maybe they're at their free flowing best for much of this one. Although I still think, scoring wise, this finishes 2-1, but quite a few opportunities, and I think Bayer Leverkusen just have so many interesting and exciting players that I think they're always worth watching, you know, even if it's not particularly high scoring.
Yeah, so in the 10th, we had a cross near goal for Bayer. No score there. And then a couple of yellow cards mid-match or mid-first portion of this game match. Extra time is where the first Leverkusen goal comes in. 1-0, number 30. And it was right at the half whistle.
Yeah, so that was scored by Jeremy Frimpong, who is a player I, first off, love his style of play. He's a wing back, but always looking to attack and gets involved on counterattacks with Bayer Leverkusen. He is probably going to be sold this summer for a lot of money, which will, interestingly enough, make Celtic Football Club a lot of cash, because before he was playing for Bayer Leverkusen, he actually played for Celtic. And he, of course, was very good there, and they sold him to the bigger club, bigger league, I should say. And basically has a sell-on clause in his contract where, you know, a team will buy him for whatever fee, and Bayer Leverkusen will owe Celtic a portion of that money. But yeah, very exciting player in this particular one. You know, we had to wait a little bit for some of the action to unfold. But Frimpong on this chance slots home a great goal. Starts from a run from Florian Wirtz, who is another player you should definitely pay attention to. Young, very explosive, very technical. He squares the ball. Does take a deflection in, but makes it 1-0, and kind of had to feel for Heidenheim, their opponent, because they were actually playing pretty well defensively. But that's life.
Yeah, and so after the half, I really felt like Heidenheim put a bit of a charge on.
Yeah, that is definitely correct.
Past the 60th minute, they were really, really moving the ball. And I had some, I don't know what you want to call it, anticipation that they might, you know,
break through
this match.
Yeah. Yeah, there was quite a bit of attacking going on from Heidenheim, or at least, you know, they were taking taking their opportunities when Leverkusen were a little bit, I guess, vulnerable. One thing about Leverkusen is they're always trying to bust off a counterattack, which can leave them a little bit vulnerable at times. 58th minute was a good chance for Heidenheim. Cannot recall the gentleman's name, but basically he forces a save from Hradecki, the Leverkusen goalkeeper there. Another thing that this is, I'm kind of jumping all over the place timeline-wise, but I think was worth mentioning. I don't know if you picked up on this, but during the beginning of the second half, throughout the whole stadium, there was this whistling going on. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I'll ask you if that is a Bundesliga tradition.
So, yeah, there is, so. Yeah, there's significance there.
Yeah, when the opposing team has possession, it's quite annoying, actually.
Yeah, and there was a little bit more than just the on-field reasons for that. First off, whistling is sort of the European booing. Now, of course, there's still booing in, like, especially in England, which is a little closer to us culturally. They still boo, but yeah, when fans are upset about things going on or are trying to maybe rattle the opponent, they just do this high-pitched whistling shrill noise that is very annoying, which is exactly why they do it. But this one was actually more of a protest. The German Soccer Federation a few weeks ago, or maybe months at this point, announced that there was they were going to have some foreign investment in the league to try and make more money, essentially. And the fans were across Germany were all quite pissed about that. So there was all sorts of protests going on in Germany this past weekend. Heidenheim's fans were pretty mild, actually, with theirs in terms of whistling. Some of the more clever ones were actually, there was one I saw that was a guy had rigged up a smoke bomb to a remote control truck, and he was driving it around the field away from the security, which I thought was a clever way of protesting. But yeah, so whole lot of sort of extracurricular stuff in context within this match. But yeah.
So yeah, 15 shots for Leverkusen, 4 for Heidenheim, 62% possession versus 38%. And this one kind of just went the way we thought it would, with an 81st minute goal, 2-0 for Leverkusen. With 4 minutes to play, there was a nice header off of a free kick, and Heidenheim gets, you know, one in the box.
Yeah, and it did make for a generally sort of nervy finish, I would say, you know, especially on the road in a title race. The last thing you want to do is concede a late goal when you think the game is over. I thought the second Leverkusen goal especially was quite good. Florian Wirtz sort of delivers a beautiful pass into the box, and Adley basically just runs around the keeper to make it 2-0. Yeah, and then the header for Heidenheim, also a great goal as well. I think one of the main things that you'll notice difference from like the Premier League, or especially in Scotland, which is sort of brute force all the time, the German League, a bit more technically focused, and you, because of that, the defense admittedly is not quite as good. As opposed to the Premier League, you get a lot of these just very good-looking goals. And traditionally, you get more goals just in general. So, Bayer Leverkusen obviously do the business here, and Bayern Munich would win, or excuse me, they would lose the next day. So, like I said, they opened up an 8-point advantage. And I got to say, things are looking pretty good. I don't know. I'm not going to call it yet, because Bayern Munich are a team that just don't ever go away in these title races, but we are certainly witnessing the closest challenge ever since about 2013 for the Bundesliga title race. So something to pay attention to.
Go Leverkusen.
Yeah, I think pretty much every non-Bayern Munich fan in the world is currently rooting for Leverkusen to do the job.
Let's keep a close eye on that.
Absolutely.
As we wrap the season here.
Yep.
So I guess we can transition to Johnston versus Rangers, which I have four notes on, because not a particularly
You can just say entertaining. Yeah, you can just say entertaining because it wasn't. And I kind of assumed it wouldn't be, but here's the thing. With the Rangers win, which they won 3-0, they rocketed up to the top of the Premiership table because Celtic conceded a late 94th minute equalizer to Kilmarnock the day before. So they dropped points again. And now they sit second in the league. So Rangers, with this win in St. Johnstone, have effectively taken control of the Scottish Premiership title race. So
I'll say this about that. Empty seats in this particular fixture.
Yeah.
And why?
So you'll just notice that obviously Celtic and Rangers sort of run the show in Scotland and also are far and away the most popular clubs. St. Johnstone are a fairly small club in general, and their fan base is, they're from a small town, Perth. Their fan base is just quite honestly not that large, so... I don't know how much incentive there was for a packed house for that fan base. One, because it was on TV. Two, you kind of knew Rangers would be doing the business. Three, Scottish winters, shitty weather. Although the sun was out for this one, but a lot of different factors, basically.
Yeah, so the most interesting part of this game for me was... 38th minute, you know, Rangers score. Diamante, mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Diamande, new signing for them.
1-0. First half, 2 minutes stoppage, no big deal. Half, and then a couple of what I would consider odd penalty kicks.
Mm-hmm.
In the 79th minute, there was a PK off of a tackle that I've seen several hundred times in this league.
Yeah.
It would not warrant a PK.
Yeah. I don't know. It's so easy to go tinfoil hat mode in Scotland because either side of the rivalry always thinks the officiating is biased towards the other. In terms of that particular penalty, is that penalty worthy, that tackle from the St. Johnstone defender? I don't know.
I've seen that be a free kick 100 times.
Yeah.
And then it's a PK.
I mean, it happens in the box, so there's obviously that. It has to happen in the box, but I don't know. The defender lunges into it, doesn't look like he's going to get much of the ball. I can honestly kind of see the rationale for it.
It probably was more of the proximity.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the box.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know who scored that PK. You might.
I believe it was James Tavernier. He's a penalty merchant. let's see. Yeah, it was James Tavernier. He scores both their penalties that they win late in this game.
And then 86th minute, handball.
Mm-hmm.
Which, okay.
Fair enough. It's supposedly cut and dry rule, but you know, that's never true.
Correct. And then, you know, 3-0 on two PKs, and then this one goes +7, but it's 9 wins in a row for Rangers.
Yeah, and since the derby that Celtic ended up winning, you would think that would sort of propel them into doing quite well in 2024. Well, no. No, Celtic, as we know, because we covered them last week, that match in Aberdeen, not very good performance. And then they follow it up in at home against Kilmarnock. Again, another less than optimal performance. Things seem to kind of be going to shit for Celtic this season, whereas Rangers are basically rounding into form at the perfect time. Obviously, 9 wins in a row, doing well in the cup competitions. Seems like their transfers and new signings are working out much better than Celtic's. So I don't know. I'm obviously, you know, they have a 2-point advantage in the title race, so it, by no means is it over, but it's a tough spot to be in right now if you're in the Celtic camp, that's for sure.
Well, we will keep the faith.
Yeah, as always, Celtic take on Motherwell on Sunday. That one's going to be televised, so I think that's something we're going to have to pay attention to. And, you know, it'll probably come down to the final day, as it so often does in Scotland. So we will just have to wait and see what happens.
Okay. I think we're approaching an hour, and if you have anything to broadcast as far as future episodes here, go ahead and do it.
Yeah, so obviously I think next week the bulk of the program is going to be spent doing sort of a formal predictions show for 2024 F1 season. I actually honestly would like to go team by team ranking prediction, and then maybe some just stuff we think is going to happen, if you want to get involved there. And then, yeah, Celtic Motherwell is going to be big. Not sure what the Premier League slate looks like just this at this moment, but yeah, as always, title race is good there as well. So lots to look forward to in the near future.
Okay. So I think that's a show. And with that, we will get gone.
Yes, indeed.
For executive producer Richard Tanaka, who made himself very present on this particular podcast, this has been Tackling the Chicane, copyright 2024. We'll see you guys next time. I'm a sailor.